Blog Talk Radio.
Power off. Power on.
Bluetooth mode.
Device paired.
Welcome to another edition of At Issue, where we discuss and debate the critical issues facing the state of Mississippi and how these issues impact you. Tonight, we take a look back at the life and legacy of a civil rights icon, Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, who would have turned 100 years old on October 6th. She went from picking cotton in Sunflower County to commanding the nation's attention during the civil rights movement. She helped organize Freedom Summer in Mississippi for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, also known as SNCC. She was also instrumental in the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party at the 1964 Democratic National Convention, where her testimony opened the country's eyes to the oppression of African Americans in Mississippi. Tonight, we'll hear from people who knew Mrs. Hamer, but first, we hear from historians at the Fannie Lou Hamer Institute for Citizenship and Democracy at Jackson State University in their own words.
She was a sharecropper. And she was influenced by her mother and her father. She was also a biblical scholar. So she was really concerned about how can you provide relief for the oppressed people? How can you provide relief for the people who were mired in poverty? So she was concerned about those issues all of her life. And she often said that she didn't exactly know how to get involved in the movement, but she saw things that were happening across the country. So when the civil rights organizations came to her community, she immediately partook of their activities and got involved in the movement. So she grew up with an idea that she wanted to improve her life chances and the life chances of the people in her community. Her main role was that she was a civil rights worker. And so one of the primary responsibilities as a member of SNCC was voter registration, but she did more. She established Freedom Farm in Sunflower County. She fed people. She clothed people. She did those things that you were admonished to do, provide clothing and shelter. And she did that for her community in Ruleville, but also she helped people across the state of Mississippi and across the nation.
She endured violence and threats, and through it all, she kept her eyes on the prize. She kept hate out of her heart. And she challenged America to be a better nation.
The Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party in 1964 went to the Democratic National Convention in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and they challenged the lily white segregated delegation of Democrats from Mississippi. And we went there with the sole purpose of replacing the segregated delegation. And we made claim that we were the legitimate delegation that represented all segments of the population in Mississippi. And the segregationist delegation did not represent all segments of the population. So Mrs. Hamer and all of us were calling for that these Freedom Democrats should be seated and not the lily white segregated delegation from our state. I didn't have any idea that we would have such a national impact on the country. I didn't really have any idea that Mrs. Hamer, that her testimony would have such a national and international impact on the country.
And if the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America.
It was overwhelming. It was emotional. It was uplifting. It was like being in church on a good Sunday. It was overwhelming.
Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to speak with our telephones off of the hook because our lives be threatened daily, because we want to live as decent human beings in America?
Her testimony was just that influential. But her testimony helped to change the rules of the National Democratic Party. So in the future, the party promised not to seat segregated delegations. They agreed to have men and women, black and white, in the delegations. So Mrs. Hamer's testimony was able to accomplish all of that. Her 15 minutes of testimony helped to change the very foundation of Democratic Party and, by definition, Republican Party politics in America. And this was a woman with a sixth-grade education.
So Fannie Lou Hamer is an extraordinarily important person. She, there's a reason that not many people know about her. It's because if we tell the story around Fannie Lou Hamer, we tell the story about a person who's not supposed to be an American hero. She's black. She's female. She was a sharecropper. Didn't have a formal education. If we tell a story of American history where someone like Fannie Lou Hamer changes America, then anyone can change America who's dedicated to it. And I think that we don't tell that story. That's not the story I learned growing up, and that's not really the story I learned in college. We studied leaders, and leaders looked like me. Leaders were had money. Leaders had education. Leaders went to private schools, you know. And Fannie Lou Hamer represents a kind of democratic hero that we still don't know how to incorporate in the history that we teach. And we would be a very different America if Fannie Lou Hamer was on the standardized test, you know, but she's not.
We can make this that she's known because she gave really nice speeches, because she mobilized people, because she organized, and all of that's very important. She also helped change institutions. She also was a symbol representing a whole host of people who had not been heard politically. She can be also seen as a symbol of a whole host of people who currently aren't being heard politically and still need to have that kind of public voice and that kind of public presence. She could be seen as a reminder of what America actually is and what citizenry actually looks like, the willingness to engage your government, the willingness to challenge injustice, even at great personal cost. But I think it's really up to us as to how she's going to be remembered. Because unfortunately, she can also just quickly become a footnote to history. And that would be a shame.
Here's what Mississippi Congressman Benny Thompson says about Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer. Quote, Fannie Lou Hamer was a clarion voice in the fight.
And greetings, not hooked up to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, as you well know. And, of course, that was information, insight into the great Fannie Lou Hamer. For those who do not know about her, then certainly you need to know. And we commemorate, of course, that was a clip that was taken from 2017, which noted that she would have been 100 years of age at that point, but of course this is now 2023, and of course that means she would be 106, I believe, years of age. The thing is, though, one of the things that was pointed out in the clip was many do not know about her, particularly in the generations that are of more recent time. And of course, it was also mentioned again, why would people not know of her? Well, because she was not considered the type of leader based on, not having, formal education and money and so forth. And I think it was really important that was pointed out, because that's what we're seeing also today, that oftentimes people who do not have, that kind of notoriety, popularity, and approval by the system oftentimes are not really appreciated, embraced, and so forth. And on that note, the Million Woman March is one of those things. It's been a blessing to be able to really observe what has happened, because, again, when we look at history, we see that this has also happened to others. The thing for us is to make sure that it doesn't continue to happen. So in the very near future, family, you are going to hear and see us talk more about what elders and ancestors such as Baba Steve Coakley, Dr. Amos Wilson and others, what they really taught us and told us about, the black haters those that look like us, by the way. We're going to talk more about them, but also point out how they operate. Well, we know why many of them operate, but perhaps more importantly, what is our plan of action to begin to address it? Because this is a situation that we can document for at least 100 years, with that being, of course, with the Honorable Marcus Garvey, leading into Paul Robeson, and even Mother Harriet Tubman said, what, you know, she could have freed more if they only knew they were slaves. Some of our people. And so it's really important that we begin to have a better, not only understanding, but a better plan of action in terms of how to deal with people who are either traitors or folk that just want to get in the freaking way for whatever reason. And of course, as Baba Steve Coakley told us, the Bule people. And we've done a lot of research now to focus on that, because there's more to that than what you really can comprehend, or you know, if you don't really study, you really won't get it. But we're going to start bringing some of that forward as he would want us to do, so that there is a better understanding, overstanding about such things. At any rate, family, we're going to get ready to go to our live line, and we are going to talk very shortly with a brother who you've had, well, we've had him on a few times before, not recently, but definitely he's been a part of the MWM New Day family for a while. Our brother Ishmael is in the house, and we're going to talk about a recent conference that took place in Atlanta. Reparations is what it was and is. And it was such a wonderful thing to hear about, you know, to really know that the continuation of the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and others is still very much in the forefront and very much, you know, moving forward. We're going to talk to our brother. Of course, we're talking about the lost foundation of Islam, and it is really a pleasure and honor to have him back with us. You know, there are thousands of groups and organizations, and I dare say hundreds at least in Philly, but there's only a few that have shown any kind of love and support for MWM, and I dare say that the Lost Foundation is one of those entities, one of those groups. I wish we had been invited, though, to the conference, but, you know, that's the way it is. But we're going to move this thing forward with MWM to make sure that people are not going to be so easily able to, you know, to not include us. And you know, it's kind of all right because it makes us work harder, I guess you could say, but it also makes us know that, you know, even if you are the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever, even if you have and are a part of not only Black history, African history, not only women's history, but world history, if you do not bring that forward in such a way, just as they just spoke of Fannie Lou Hamer, again, great, great Black woman. We call her Saint Fannie Lou Hamer. But again, many don't know of her. And why? We're not keeping our own history. So we have some resolutions for that, including the National Black Women's History Project is one of them. And for Philly in particular, the Philadelphia Great Black History Initiative, so that we can literally begin to really document the history, the legacy, the traditions, the accomplishments of Black folks in Philadelphia. But as we go now on the national tour, getting ready for a national tour to bring the Men and Women World March into full fruition, you will hear us bring certain initiatives into these various other cities. So again, when we go into Chicago, we'll begin to look at Black women who have made contributions in Chicago. So if we have a listing of sisters who have, you know, who either lived in Chicago, born in Chicago, who made a difference, you know, including, hey, Dr. Frances Quest Welsing is one of them. There are many. We've researched it. Catherine Dunham. There's many. And so, again, it is up to us to make sure that we maintain, retain our own history. And so we're not looking for the system to do it, and we definitely ain't looking for Negroes to do it. And so, and we call them now Negropeans, just to clarify that. And so, you know, we know what we have to do now, and we're going to. But anyway, let's get ready to go to our live line, and we're going to talk with our brother. It's always good to be with him, to communicate with him, to exchange with him. He always brings us wonderful information, and certainly to talk about what happened last weekend with reparations. Oh, my gosh, I heard it was incredible. I know a few people that went, but we're going to get it directly from one of the people who was, you know, really involved in, you know, bringing it into fruition. He's been a member of the Lost Foundation for at least 3 decades. So he's definitely not new to, you know, what needs to be done, and have continued to do that in the best interest of our people. So without further ado, let's go to our live line, and let's bring in our brother, Ismael Islam. And again, we're going to talk with him about the conference that just took place in Atlanta that was convened by the Honorable Salas Muhammad and others, but certainly I'm going to have him to share it with you. So let's do this. Let's go to that line, and let's welcome my brother to this segment of New Day. Hey, my brother, how are you this evening?
Peace, my sister. How are you?
Can you hear me? You know. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Loud and clear.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Always. A pleasure to hear your voice.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, black at you.
Well, you've been in the struggle for a long time.
Oh, listen, so, you know, well, we in it to win it, brother. So whatever comes with it is all right, because at some point we're going to win completely.
Absolutely. I'm very thankful for you, for all the work that you do in this city and around the United States and elsewhere. It is a pleasure for me to come on to your program and to give a review of what happened in Atlanta the
mm-hmm.
past weekend.
Yes.
First of all, the convening was initiated by the Honorable Silas Muhammad and his Queen Meshaki Muhammad, and those who are with the nation who are with the Afro-descendant nation. The Afro-descendant nation has been organized in which to take our plight outside of America to the international world. That has always been the idea of the Honorable Silas Muhammad and those who are working with him. So we do have a form of a nation in the process in its early stages. So I'd like to acknowledge our president, Akhila Mukarram, and acknowledge her staff, who worked tirelessly to get these groups, 25 to 30 groups, to convene in Atlanta. It may have been more than that. They have came together with – can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, my brother.
They may have been 25 or 30 different organizations that convened in Atlanta. And the idea is simply unity and to bring the collective minds together to complete the task of reparations. So we have had some brilliant minds who came forth on the weekend and with their ideas on how we should unify as a people. So Mr. Muhammad was very excited, that we had these various groups coming together, and they all sat down and hashed out ideas in which how we are to achieve reparations. So the thing is now that this was the initial meeting, and this meeting is going to continue. The next scheduled meeting will be in March, which I am working tirelessly to get you on the panel. So I have spoke with the chief minister. You have spoken with him before in Washington,
yes,
D.C., and I have requested that you also become a panelist in this next and upcoming meeting. And it is my humble apologies that you were not alerted for this weekend, the weekend that passed, because I had a lot on my mind, sister. And I really wanted to make sure that I got myself down there, and it just was a crazy thing for me. I was really moving very quickly, and I neglected to inform you as I should. So please accept my humblest apology. And again, I am working to get you to be one of the panelists, as like many with them. So we have a lot of brothers and sisters who sat down, and some of the things they were talking about, everybody didn't agree all the time. But the initial thing is they sat down together and decided that we should come together and unify for reparations for all of our people. And Mr. Muhammad was excited. Malik Zulu Shabazz has accepted the task to lead us forward as a group leader to cause us to gel in a rapid pace. And Mr. Hansford was there, the NAA, you know, just so many groups. I'm telling you, it was about 25 or 30 groups there, representatives. And they all sat down, and they heard Mr. Muhammad and his wife, Mashaki Muhammad. They heard about his history. Our people do not really know about the Honorable Siles Muhammad and his work that he has been working in the international scene for our people. So they were able to feel his spirit and feel his devotion of love for our people, Afro-descended people. And that is the term that we want the people to begin to understand, that we can come under the auspice of that term as a nation of people. So I'm excited, and it's a lot of work to do here in Philadelphia.
Oh,
and so, sister, you know, get ready, because I'll be calling.
we're definitely ready. We are definitely ready, and having done, you know, the kind of, well, you know, and again, I definitely accept your apology, because as I had no problem in letting people know that you and of course the family of the Lost Foundation have always been there for us here in Philadelphia, where most, you know, have really just pushed it through the curb or tried to, and it's okay, because what many don't understand is even though they saw the big event in 97, they don't really know that, you know, we have been designated to do work now that will allow our people to move forward in such a way that it will begin to address the various kinds of unnecessary interruptions in our movements and so forth. And so now we know these close and personal. We know the who, how, when, where, and what of certain things, and not just Philadelphia, but in other cities. And see, these things really have to be brought forth, because over the past 100 years, these types of things have really interfered in our growth and development. So the bottom line is we are now ready to address some of these things, which we're going to kind of convey very, very soon, because we've been working on it diligently. But my brother, again, I heard it was a wonderful event and coming together, and, you know, based on what you shared, you know, coming up after you, we're going to bring in Brother Kofi Takara, who is the chairperson for the National Black United Front. And so with what you just laid out, my brother, truly, it just sounds and feels in a representation of a real united front for our people. So I applaud you all. I mean, I just think it's a wonderful thing to bring all those different kind of elements together. Like you said, I'm sure folks didn't all agree. I mean, that to me wouldn't have been, you know, realistic anyway. So, but it sounds like, you know, some of the things that you were able to accomplish were really major. With that said, is there anything you can share with us about, you know, what might have been actually, if not voted on, at least kind of agreed on as a collective?
Well,
is there anything to share?
There is one thing, the direction that Malik Zulu Shabazz has put an idea out in which we would look at the term plebiscite and see how that can apply to where we're trying to move as various groups. And so we will be reviewing it, hashing it out, and hearing what the people say about this term and how we can apply it. But it's a key element that we can possibly use to gain more momentum. We will be probably hearing a lot more about that. I want to invite you to travel with us in March to D.C. so that you can hear for yourself what we're moving to do. We have to find a system in which legally we can place our hats on. And that may be a term that we can use to gain momentum and gain unity. I'm most interested to hear your next upcoming guest, because we would need to have his input in March as well. So I need to know some of the sisters that you are affiliated with. You will be an essential part for me here in the city of Philadelphia in gathering organizations and minds to now let's all collaborate on the idea of gaining momentum with the fight for reparations. As you see what's going on in the world today, you see that we are being excluded once again. They have put the fight with our brothers and sisters in Palestine in the forefront, and now we're back in the background once again. But we're determined to get human rights, and we're determined for reparations. We're determined to also walk in the path that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us to walk in. We don't just want reparations. We don't just want monies, but we need air-going airplanes, sea-going ships, land, resources, and we need all of these things put on the table so that everyone can see this is the idea that we're following according to the messenger, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then let's collaborate with the other ideas with all our people, because some of our people may want to receive their reparations and stay in America. The Lost Foundation of Islam, we want to go. We want to leave. But we need the resources.
Sure.
We need the resources.
Absolutely.
So we need to put everybody's plan on the table and then hash out how are we going to achieve it. So this is a very interesting time. I'm excited. I've been, as you say, I've been in the nation over 30 years. And I finally see the door opening for all of our Afro-descended people. Regardless of what organization you're in, you can be a Afro-descendant. All of this needs to be explained to all the various groups so they can understand whatever you choose to be, you can still be an Afro-descendant. Whatever religion you want to establish, you still can be an Afro-descendant because the term itself applies to us all. So that's just a little snippet. You can always give them my, you know, my Yahoo address. You know exactly where I'm at. You can always call me and say, brother, somebody needs to talk to you about this here. I will gladly make time to sit down with them and give some clarity to the idea of Lost Foundation Islam, the Afro-descendant nation, and those who are working with the Most Honorable Silas Muhammad and his queen, Mashaki Muhammad, and our president, so Mukaram. So she, you know, she is working hard. Sister's working hard. Again, the sisters are in the forefront. You see it again, right? This is what's happening. The black woman, she's in the forefront fighting. Akilah is doing a very good job, and her staff are doing a very good job. So I can't wait for this meeting, and I will give you any updates that I can as quickly as I can in regard to the March date that's coming forth. I thank you for allowing me these moments, and I appreciate you, and you know I love you, so I ain't got to tell you that. But
yeah, no doubt.
You
about
are
it.
My sister.
No doubt.
You are my sister, and I humbly apologize to you for the mishap, and your staff as well. You know, they all have been working with you as well. I've met several of them, and they work just as hard as you do. So continue working, striving, motivating our people, because it's essential at this time. Thank you, sister.
You know, thank you, my brother. And you know, Brother Ishmael, I would be remiss if I did not mention something, because you talked about plebiscite. And, you know, we've been teaching and educating and preparing to do what we call pre-plebiscite sessions. We've sent information to Attorney Mzulu. We never got a response from him and others, but again, see, that's why I say we're going to start really letting people know that we did, in fact, reach out to people and for whatever reason did not get any responses. But we've been doing that for 5 years now, and so in another week or so, my brother, there's literally going to be a pre-plebiscite session just for sisters. Because what we realize is that as we move forward to do major kinds of advances in terms of plebiscite, we've got to educate our people about what that is. And you and I, my brother, are in an excellent position, because when we talk about plebiscite, if you start looking at the history, and one of the salutes tonight is to the great Dr. Imari Obadeli, who was born and raised in Philadelphia. He attended Temple University, where he obtained his doctorate's degree in political science. And so when he was released from prison, I was blessed. I was, you know, very young, but you know, coming up in the struggle. But it was he wasn't Dr. Imari at the time, but Dr. Imari, Baba Imari is the one who helped us to learn about what a plebiscite is. Because that was his field. Once he went back to school, again, he got his doctorate's degree in political science. So he literally began to research it very in-depthly and began to teach about plebiscite. None of us had ever heard anything of that nature. But what he also gave us was how to begin to design it or approach it for us. So he gave us the fundamentals in terms of international law and in the political arena. But he also, coming from a black perspective, RGB perspective, he showed us ways to begin to look at it in the manner that would be more applicable to us. So again, family, Dr. Imari Obadeli is, at least for me, the first one that ever talked about plan. We're talking about in the late 1970s, early 1980s. And he talked about, you know, a plebiscite. And then our other elder, Baba Herman Ferguson, who was not only one of the co-founders of the Malcolm X grassroots movement, but he was also a political prisoner too. And he was the one that also started or co-founded the Jericho movement, which addresses political prisoners.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes,
so
I've heard
these were elders. Absolutely. So again, for me, there's certain things I am not going to ever talk about without making certain that the reference from whence it comes, that's so important. I never heard of anyone ever talk about plebiscite prior to Baba Imari Obadeli, Dr. Imari Obadeli, and Baba Herman Ferguson. Now, I could be wrong, but I doubt it. I doubt it. Because anybody that I talked to, they would tell you
again,
that, you
know, I'm just saying that this was an idea put forth by Malik Zulu Shabazz.
Yeah, I heard that part. That's what I said.
I have not really done any research on this part myself. I'm interested because I am a researcher. I will take a in-depth look at that. I'm looking to hear any elder that can give us insight. So I'll be calling on you for data bring me up to speed. You know, you can bring me up to speed so that we can bring others up to speed.
Absolutely. And that's what we do, brother. And note, and this is why I say it like that. One of the reasons why the sisters are going to do their own session is, and most real black men agree with this, some of these other ones, you know, that's questionable, but most real black men know what I'm getting ready to say is true, and it's this. Once the sisters, once our mothers, grandmothers, aunties, sisters, once that group or that segment of our people has a certain type of edification, information, and capability, what do you think that's going to mean for the children?
Yeah, I agree. Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he says, he teaches that the woman, if she is the first nurse that we get all our understanding and teaching from. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has taught us that the woman is the greatest asset. So I understand where you are. We need to bring y'all back to the forefront, because I do remember that you were one of the conveners, or the convener, I might say, for Philadelphia with the Million Woman March. So
that's right.
I know what you can do, you know, and so I know some of your history very well, and I understand what you're saying. So what we need to do is I would love to hear Professor Obadeli if I can and speak.
Well,
to him.
Unfortunately, yeah, brother. No, unfortunately, he may transition.
Has he passed?
An ancestor.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. He has any disciples? Does he have disciples?
Well, this is why, and we'll talk more about this at another time. You know, we'll sit down and go through this. This is why I stay in contact with people like Baba Bilal Sunni Ali and other Mama Kandi and other original members of the Republic of New Africa, because Baba Imari Obadeli was president
President Imari Obadeli of the Republic of New Africa. And so so these are the people. So the answer is not so much as disciples. This is a government. That's a government. And so like the nation, it behooves us to connect with other governments, independent societies, thinkers, and so forth. But again, brother, we will have that conversation. I will be more than happy to, you know, introduce you or connect you with some of the people who have certainly helped me. I'm telling you, Baba Bilal Suni Ali, I don't know if it wasn't for him, I know I certainly wouldn't be knowing certain things or able to do them. And he is just beautiful, just wonderful. And he was with Gil Scott-Heron.
That's my favorite artist. Yeah,
he's the original Midnight Band, but has a whole bunch of other hats. But anyway, certainly I will introduce you. This is my brother. I see Brother Kofi is in queue.
Please bring him on. And one last thing
I want to introduce the two of you briefly, just so you can say peace to one another, and then at a later date, I'll definitely exchange, you know, Brother Kofi doesn't mind, I know. I'll make sure that you have information, because he is a well. And see, again, self-determination, the Black United, there are people who you know are true to what they're talking about doing, trying to do, and so forth. These are the people that we have worked very, very hard to stay in touch with and now to build with. Okay, but brother, you wanted to have some closing comments, so please, by all means, do.
Well, let me give a closing comment. The temple is available for any type of meeting. You know where the temple are. That's 3615 North 22nd Street.
Yes.
I can be contacted there through you or through my information that you can pass on anytime that there's a need to have a place just to conversate and communicate. The doors could be open. And I would love to say to your audience, take care of my sister. She's a good sister. Thank you.
Well, brother, I appreciate you because, again, you know, there are a few Black men that I can definitely say they're not just about a lot of talk. A lot of these people here, particularly in Philly, they give you a whole lot of yang-yang, but when it comes to stepping up, the only thing they step up to do is to get a check, to fill out some grant money and to see how they're going to manipulate the situation. And, you know, that's what most of these folks be doing. Okay. So, again, you know, we love our brothers. We love our – and we now call them serious brothers. And the serious that we talk about is the S-I-R-I-U-S. See, that brilliancy, that star power, that's what we're talking about with some of our Black men. That's who they are for us, serious Black men. So, my brother, stay right there for one moment. I just want to introduce you briefly to Brother Kofi, and let me just open up his mic real quick, and then we're going to talk with him more in depth. Brother Kofi, how's my brother?
Black Power, how you doing, sister?
All right.
Can you hear me?
There he is. Yes, we hear you loud and clear. I just want to take a few moments to introduce you to our brother Ishmael Islam. He, of course, is the minister here in Philadelphia of the Lost Fountain Nation. And when I conveyed to him, you know, some of your history as now, of course, the national chairperson for the National Black United Front and many other things, he certainly, you know, said he would love to connect with you in the future. So I just want you two to kind of meet briefly. And if I may, I'd like to, you know, give him your number.
Certainly. Yes, absolutely.
Brother Kofi, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I hear you.
I'd like to give you the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. I'm thankful that you are working as hard as you do for the salvation of our people. So I'd like to give you my sincere greetings, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, brother. It's a pleasure meeting you, albeit over the phone.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good thanks. All right, my brother Ishmael, I will be in touch with you later this week because we do have Million Woman March week coming up. Million Woman March Day, actually. October 25th is Million Woman March Day, and we will be doing an event called Hands Around City Hall. We want our sisters to join us on that day for Hands Around City Hall for what we call P3. Which is power, prosperity, and peace.
All right,
so
my
I definitely want to get you more information about that. All
yes,
right, my brother.
Do.
Again, thank you. Thank you for joining us, and definitely keep it up, keep it up, keep it up.
Peace, my sister.
To you. All right, family, again. That was our brother, Ishmael Islam. And, again, he's the minister here in Philadelphia of the Lost Foundation. And, we're going to get more information about the conference that took place in Atlanta last week, dealing with reparations and other things, human rights violations and so forth. And so we'll be getting more information to share with you in the very near future. Also with us right now, we have our brother Kofi in the house, and it is such a wonderful thing to have him back on our program. He's been on our program on numerous occasions, not recently, but certainly we go back at least a good 10 years. Wouldn't you say, brother Kofi?
Yeah, see, that's you got to say 20. See, ten years.
Yep,
you know,
right.
You look back. I'm saying 20 or more.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
right.
You don't necessarily think about it in those terms, or at least myself sometimes. And when you really do the math, though, it'd be that long.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How you doing tonight?
And it's been a blessing. Oh, brother, you know, as I say, as long as we can do this work and see that there's some victories coming, I'm good. It's all good. But, you know, it's interesting because I remember, you know, some of our conversations were, like you said, 20 years ago, and it has to do with what we're getting ready to talk about tonight. And so, again, to share with our people, or to really exemplify, I like that better, consistency. I mean, this is so important. People who pop in, pop out, pop in, pop out, that's not real struggle stuff, y'all. I mean, you know, for real, that's just not real stuff, you know. But the point is, what you're getting ready to hear now is an event or a gathering or a tradition. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for, that brothers and sisters have been doing for, you know, quite a while. But in this particular situation, Brother Kofi is going to share with us how the National Black United Front and other organizations have maintained, you know, this history, this tradition of honoring our ancestors. So, Brother Kofi, I'm going to turn it over to you. Tell us about – no, wait a minute. Hold that point for one moment. Before we talk about the caravan, I would be remiss, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what is the National Black United Front. Let's go with that.
Right. Absolutely. National Black United Front was founded in 1980 in Brooklyn, New York, to bring into being the idea, the concepts of how could we come together as a people. Some of our great ancestors talked about it. Or theorized about it. Of course, we've always had this challenge throughout our existence. How could we set aside some of our ideological, theological, sociological, geographic differences in which to come together? So the brothers and sisters called together the National Black United Front in 1980 in Brooklyn, New York at the Armory there. And it was a great reception to that call. And the organization basically is an independent, grassroots, activist, everyday sisters and brothers who have quite a long track record of working on a number of different issues and challenges and opportunities for us as a people on all levels, from the international level to the national level to local level. lot of emphasis on the criminal injustice system in a lot of ways, dealing with police terrorism, brutality, and misconduct, those type of individual cases, death row cases. The list is long, dealing with racialized terror and violence against our people. One of the key things about the organization is that we maintain a financial independence. We believe in self-determination for our people. So we are supported and funded by the membership as well as community support, meaning that we're not looking for, we're not in the nonprofit industrial complex, right? We're not looking for others to fund our things that we say that are important to us. And we're all self-sufficient as an organization. And like I say, I mean, we could spend the whole show just talking about, excuse me, sorry about that, all of the, you know, a lot of different history and what have you. We've been fortunate. I'm talking to you from Houston, Texas. We've had a chapter of MBUF in Houston for since the founding of the organization. And so that's allowed for some level of continuity within the organization. Myself, personally, I've been in the organization about 33 years at this point now. And like you were talking about, how long have we been? And I'm like, man, I it don't seem like 33 years ago, but myself personally, I've been engaged in the organization, and I found it to be of high quality, engaged in the work on the ground type of work, activism, organizing to make changes and support our people. And so that's kind of a very generalized kind of outlook on the organization. If people wanted more information, they could go to www.nbuf.net, and it has a little bit more of the history and everything that is there.
Wow. All right. All right. One sidebar for you, Brother Kofi, because you just reminded me of something. I think I might have mentioned this to you before. I was a kind of a little young thing. I used to sit on the floor when they used to do Black United Front meetings here in Philly. David Richardson, who was our state rep, he was a co-chair, one of the co-chairs for Philly. And I was a part of what was known as the AFCOM village. Well, we called it the AFCOM Learning Center at that time. And that's where all the meetings used to be held here in Philly for the Black United Front for Philly. And I remember, and again, I was a student, right? But I remember the demonstration rally that was either 1980 or 81 in New York. Do you remember that?
No, I was that's before that. My time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was at that as a student, So you just reminded me of that. But, yes, that was one of the first. And this is why I tell people, sometimes, Brother Kofi, I hear people today that are a little older be saying, oh, I don't want to go to no rally. I don't want to go to no march. We did that all. And I'm like, how did you get started? You know, I ask people, how did you get to where you're at? Because I guarantee you, you went to a rally, a march, a demonstration or something. So why people get to a certain point where, okay, yeah, you did that, but do you remember that there's a lot of other folks who haven't had that experience and need that experience in order to grow and develop? You see, so we need to be a little more cognizant of just because we don't want, some folks don't want to do this, that anymore, then go do what you need to do, but allow people to go through, you know, those experiences because it helps with their growth and development. And again, you know, I'm saying that in terms of me, from going to rallies, going to marches, I was able to convene one at some point.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, we definitely have been in the street. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, we definitely have been in the street type of organization. both nationally as well as locally. And I spent many, many times in rallies, protests, gatherings, meetings, all of those type of things as a part of education and going directly to the people. And it's always a good place to be. Of course, as you know, we talking about tactics. What is a yes. protest or a rally supposed to do? Raise an issue,
right.
But it doesn't. That's yes. mobilization, not necessarily organization, right? So
right. Right.
That's where you meet the people. Oftentimes, is directly. Even in this high technological age that we're living in, it's still nothing like the interaction face to face with sisters and brothers. So yeah. And I was at one earlier today. I was at one earlier today, you know.
That's
yeah.
right. I know that's right. So okay, mm-hmm. so let us fast forward again, and of course,
yeah.
before we close out with you or leave with you, you're going to give us contact information, all that. But let's go
right.
to what's getting ready to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe what next week. Tell us about
right.
that.
Right, a week from today,
yeah.
we'll be hosting the National Black United Front. Will be hosting the 26th annual Sankofa Caravan to the Ancestors. Here in Houston, from Houston, Texas, to the shores of Galveston, Texas. And for the sisters and brothers that may be listening, that's roughly 45 minutes to an hour away. And the origin of the Sankofa Caravan to the Ancestors kind of lends itself to the African-centered movement, the African-centered thinking and the desire and the fundamentalist base of our worldview. And it was exemplified in the early 90s or put on screen, as many of your listeners know, with the classic movie Sankofa by Dr.
Yes.
Holly Garima, who put the movie, the concepts have been there. People have been teaching about them, but he put that movie together independently, went around the country showing it, and so it was a cinematic representation in some ways of things that we have been learning. And our first caravan, the Sankofa Caravan, was actually at an MBUF convention. And what we stated when we were planning the convention is that we didn't want to just have someone come and speak to us about African spirituality. We wanted to have a collective experience together. And Brother Omawali,
mm-hmm.
who you remember from MBUF, who is a tremendous yeah. researcher, as well as other
yeah.
community sisters and brothers from different groups within Houston, collectively we came up with the idea to go to Galveston, and Brother Omawali did some research, and there's some tremendous history there, Port City. Some of the enslaved ancestors came through there. It was the big city in this region before Houston was ever founded. So we, and let me say this too, you know, the brothers, we didn't create anything, as you know. The brothers and sisters, I think up in Coney Island, have been doing things and going to the water for celebration, ceremony, ritual is something that goes back hundreds, if not thousands of years for us as a people. But we just kind of Sankofa'd it, captured it to see how can we do this in our day and time, in our region of the country. And we did that. It was tremendous. To paint a picture for those listening, it's a ceremony on the beach. You got African drums, dance, prayers, African people of African ancestry of all faith traditions, historical information is given, and we all dress in white as a part of the tradition. So Professor Small was there at the first Sankofa Caravan, and he made the suggestion that, hey, you know, y'all might want to do this annually. And
right.
We took them up on that suggestion. And then, so we have been doing it, and this year we'll make 26 years, and it's a standalone. It's not a part of our convention. It's a standalone, independently financed act of self-determination for us as a people to honor the Creator, right? To acknowledge our ancestors, to learn something about our African and African and American history and culture. To the one of the functional parts is give us energy for the work that we need to be doing, that we are doing, and that we need to be doing. And then lastly, one of the things that has evolved is it's been a time for us to settle some of our differences and squash some of our beefs, right? So whether that's in, within the family, within movement formations, we coming together in unity here. And as the elders used to say, let some of the things go out in the water. So those are some of our goals and objectives. It's free. It is on a public beach there in Galveston. And we've had many people. If you think about all of the people, many people that are in the movement that are now ancestors, many of you were talking about Baba Herman Ferguson, Mama Ialua and Baba Herman. They've been there. Dr. Obadeli, now, I don't think that Dr. Obadeli had been there, but you know Dr. Obadeli taught in his later years at Prairie View for about 20 years. So we had him right here with us for a long time. And when he made his transition, he was one of the major ancestors that we acknowledged at that time. But a lot of different activists, organizers, scholars, people from all across the country, and in some cases all across the world have joined us for this special day, which is always the third weekend in October, the Sankofa caravan to the ancestors. So it's a physical caravan, sister. We have to tell people it's like cars, buses, you know what I mean? You know, going down the highway, and then we're actually out on the beach. So we've been blessed with a lot of support from the cultural community, from all different type of organizations and what have you, who have helped us to maintain this for 26 years. Like you said earlier, I'm going to say this and I'm going to be quiet. Like you said earlier, it's one thing to start something or jump on something when it's, you know, popular or trending. It's another thing to have the principles about what you're doing and keep it going.
That's right. Absolutely. Yep. That to me is what kind of determines, you know, what's real and what was that thing, Memorex? Commercial used to come along.
Man, you going way back. Yeah, you going way back. Is it live or Memorex?
Right. Yes, indeed. I mean, that's what helped to determine, you know, what's real and what's just, I call it hype now, because I see this so much. And, you know, it lasts for the moment, and it's really only designed to do that. So, again, I totally appreciate any of the things that we've been able to keep and maintain over, you know, two decades or more. We have to support that, I mean, because that's an indication that it's real. And speaking of that, I would be remiss if I did not mention, of course, that you over the years have also been involved in something else that has been tradition and has happened over several decades, and we're talking about the pilgrimage, of course, New York every year on May 19th. And the only thing that stopped that, y'all, was COVID. That's the only thing that stopped that for more than 50 years was COVID. But the Kofi and others have been very instrumental in making certain that the annual pilgrimage to Malcolm X's gravesite is, you know, happens. And that's why when he mentioned buses and cars and all of that, that's what has been happening for actually since the time of El Hajj Malik's
demise, assassination. You know, right. To adopt
I think
small,
I've been able to go like three times with, like you said, Barbara Small and the Organization for Afro-American Unity, Sons of Africa, Malcolm X Grassroots. Malcolm X Commemoration Committee, December 12th movement that shut down Harlem with the march afterwards. It's been quite, and one year we were there and Mama Ialua was there. Baba Herman had made his transition, but Mama Ialua was there, and Baba Sekou had gotten out, and he was there, you know.
I was there that
year that I was there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
So, yeah, that's
I tell you why, that one was such a memory for me, because that the year that Baba Sekou came home and we were at the caravan, I had the honor to carry the stool that year. Yeah.
So, you know, codifying or one of the things I think that is powerful about it is when we talk about, we have decided that this is important.
And we
have determined, and now we have children, sister, they don't know anything else but the caravan. They're so excited every year for the caravan and the caravan activities. And we've been working really hard to infuse with a high level of responsibility some of the younger sisters and brothers with the care and maintenance. It's like the Sankofa bird with the egg in its mouth. If you hold it too tight, you'll break it. If you hold it too loose, you'll drop it. But like saying, hey, some of you all have been here since you were in your mama's belly. And
that's
this is all that you know. And so now it's incumbent upon you to take this for another 25 years and bring your creativity and your perspective on the foundation in which we've laid.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, and we've been pleased. We had some people from Philly here last year, some sisters from Philly. Some sisters to come down just through word of mouth. What happens is we tend to get pretty good regional participation, meaning some of the larger cities in Texas, Oklahoma, in the southwest area, Louisiana, New Orleans, you know, those places. But people do come from, you know, a lot of different places, and even we've had many sisters and brothers from the continent to come, and they say,
"Wow,
I feel like I'm at home."
Well, I tell you, brother, when you look at the pictures and the footage, I mean, it is just such a beautiful, and you could feel it through the photos, you know. So the family, I'm saying again, you know, we'll make certain if you're interested that if there's any footage available, any videos available, we'll certainly make certain. And on our end, we'll be planning for next year. Usually we're right in the midst of Million Woman March stuff in October, but I'm going to really make it an effort, brother, for next year. Because one of the things that we used to do here in Philly, and that's one of the things that have been lost along with a lot of other things, because like you said earlier, folks have just, the idea of self-determination has just been, I mean, it's almost become non-existent in this city. And then anybody that is even talking about or trying to do it does not, you know, really get any support. In fact, there's efforts to try to, you know, really create a demise. So what we're now looking forward to doing is just restructuring and rebuilding and now, you know, going on these kind of excursions or trips or caravans, because we used to do it a lot years ago, you know, before COVID. I mean, it was something that it didn't mean, we would do that all the time. Here in Philly, and I know you can remember, for Malcolm X, the pilgrimage, we used to literally bring a bus, and if not a bus, a van, you know, something like that. I mean, that was something that was organized every year. I don't know if you remember, there was a brother here, oh gosh, he's an ancestor now, and so Hamid, Brother Hamid, he used to always organize for that particular event. But everybody knew every year that's what we were doing, you know. And it was a mainstay. And so, again, we've got to get back to this. We've got to get – it's almost like going to New York during the weekend of the 4th of July. We always know we're heading to New York come around the 4th of July.
We face similar challenges where people in, say, it may be sisters and brothers from Dallas. Dallas is about 3.5 to 4 hours away, right? Dallas always represents at the Sankofa Caravan to the ancestors. But in the past, they may have had buses, organized buses. What happened? That particular person or group that organized that bus maybe somebody becomes an ancestor, maybe something else befalls them, or maybe they get to the age where they can't do that anymore, so then things fall off. And I think that's a challenge for us throughout the movement is to how do we actually properly pass the torch relative to these events, but just in general. And it's not necessarily something easy that's done, but it's something that we need to be strategically and tactical about. And sometimes we got to step back, got to let people make mistakes. That's been my experience.
That's right.
You know, but really grooming, really, really putting people in position, not always needing to be in the spotlight of everything, but really, really grooming. You know, Reverend Daughtry, who I know you know well, he had said something, the first chairman of MBUF, he said, I think it was one time he couldn't be at a meeting or a gathering, and he said, he may have gotten it from somebody else. He said, well, if this organization can't function without me, it's not an organization, it's a personality cult.
That's right. That's, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I got that from him. He might have got it from somebody else, but, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's going on now as well, brother, and I'm sure you are aware of that. That's what we're looking at. We're looking at people. People have really become followers. And see, it's changed now from how it was meeting. And, of course, things always change, but this is like really kind of getting to a point of maddening, meaning, of course, you know, there's a following and a leadership in that context. But now this whole idea of followers have reached almost like some kind of it's just so hypish. And note, what do you have on Facebook? Followers, you know, push this thing, and so that you can be a follower of a certain, you know, entity. I mean, it has become ridiculous. And with that said, people are now, and I like this terminology, folks are starting to become sheeple.
That's
the kind of following that we're looking at. It's following almost like blindly. You know, it's not following with the intent of really collectively doing some things. It's following as if you just ride along.
Well, you remember, you know, in our movement, there is a terminology of single charismatic leadership.
Right.
And
yes.
And that's something that we have studied, and it takes a certain deliberateness not to fall into that, right? That everything is hinging. But then when we look at it, I think you and I were having this conversation, when we look at it from a historical standpoint, there are people that have the charisma, that have the dedication. And I'm talking about in our contemporary history, in our movement, and our ancient history. There's some sisters and brothers that have that it factor, that dynamism, that charisma, and that dedication. So I think it's up to us as to how do we acknowledge some of that, but at the same time know what is the best strategic way that we can push our movement forward. And I think we have to be very deliberate about that because, you know, the spotlight can get the tasting good, right? The cameras, the microphones, the what have you, the adulation, all of that. And as human beings, sometimes we fall into some of those traps. But I think we have to be very deliberate about how we go about organizing, and then things don't just become in buff, and this is Brother Kofi.
Brother Kofi.
But it might feel good, but then how can we learn from the ancestors, their successes and some of the mistakes that have been made, not to make those same mistakes again? I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying that's something that should always be on the table, based upon all of the knowledge, all of the history, all of the information that we have. And if we don't have it, other people that do have it, that say, how can we place ourselves in a position for full and complete independence, liberation, sovereignty, all of those big words, and make sure we take advantage or learn the lessons of some of the mistakes of the past. And I'm a constant work in progress in that arena myself.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, all of what we are doing, it to me, is a work in progress. You know, I always remember, I'm sure others have said it too. In fact, I know others have said it too, but the one that sticks in my brain a lot is Dr. Khalid Muhammad. And he used to often say, or make the statement of saying, from the cradle to the grave. And so I see the same thing in regards to growth and development, being in the movement, being in the struggle. It's from the cradle to the grave that you're dealing with, you know, making the effort to become better, to grow, to develop. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm finding, Brother Kofi, is
you know, Khalid is born and raised in Houston, Texas.
I surely do.
That's just a note.
Absolutely.
Fifth Ward.
I surely.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry.
But you know,
I just had to throw that in.
Oh yeah, I know. You know that I was one of the national co-conveners for the Million Youth March.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
A lot of people don't know that. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, you know. It's really interesting to kind of, you know, go through these processes. But, again, I feel very blessed to kind of have experienced it because it really helped me to grow and showed me a lot. But the point I was going to make is that one of the things that we're getting ready to do to in response to what you just conveyed about what we need to do in highlighting, you know, the kinds of people that we want to bring forward. One of the things that we'll be doing actually here in Philly on November the 4th is our first what we call RBG social. It's a dinner. It's also a fundraiser.
Okay.
But it's RBG, meaning we want folks to come in RBG, red, black, and green.
Okay.
And it's our first type of event of this nature. But what we're going to be doing is bringing forth what we call our warrior and community queens. So we'll literally be introducing to the community sisters that we have selected that is going to be MWM Warrior and Community Queens, or Kadafis, you see. So this way, they not only have the capability to interact with one another in that kind of manner, they will have the responsibility of for example, if there's a disagreement or a grievance or whatever, that's the council that will be now established for you to take that stuff to as a preliminary, you see. So my point is, we, you know, in examining what you just said and looking at these various things that we need to do, this will enable us to begin to nurture and to develop the types of representation that we say is ours, you see. And we make it very clear. You know, we're not trying to go by nobody else's rules, policies, and things of that nature.
once we have an agreement that this is the kind of structure or codes of conduct that, that we're going to establish for what we're doing, then that's the way it's going now, you see. So these are the types of things in developing what we now call the Global AFCON Village, so that there is components amongst us that are very clear, very deliberate, very intentional, you see, that takes the things, that some of the things that we've been taught, some of the things that, that we have embraced, we talk about in Guza Saba. Well, most folks in this city and in other cities, that's just really in December. That's not something that they're really looking at on those 7 days a week or 360 days out of the year. They look at it for 7 days, and that's it. Mm-hmm. They have little to no modes of operations to you know, embrace or to harness those principles any other time. So, again, what MWM has done as we proceed, we've created Ujima Partners. So now when we proceed to do business, we will reach out to folk in the context of Ujima, Collective Work and Responsibility Cooperative Economics. Then that way we're ongoing doing business with one another in that concept, in that context. You see, so you're absolutely correct. This is what we have to now do to develop modes of operations that's going to allow us to, you know, not only grow into and develop, but to create some form of sustainability. That, you know, that's really, really important now, to be able to create some kind of maintenance. You know, how are we going to keep what we got, you know? So again... So, Brother Kobe, share with folk, you know, where they can get more information, what they can do to support. Please provide that.
Absolutely. You want to go to www.nbuf, that's nbuf.net, nbuf.net, and it shows you the whole schedule for the Sankofa Caravan that's coming up on Saturday, October the 21st. You can call us at 832-422-7806. That's 832-422-7806. And everything is on the website. It's basic information, and that is a way that you, there's a email. You can send an email and what have you from the website, and you can get information about the organization in general, but also the 26th annual Sankofa Caravan to the Ancestors.
And one other thing, Brother Kofi, that I need to ask, and that is membership. What do we need to do to become a member, be it individual, organization? Tell us about that.
Right. That information is on the website. If you contact us, then there is a membership form that we get to everyone, and then that membership is put up for review within the organization. You know, the day and time that we're living in, we have to do proper vetting. But contact us, we get you a membership form, and then there's a fairly simple process, but we're not an organization that looks for membership just on paper. We do look for active members, people to be actively engaged with the organization, not just something where, you know, you come in and you get a lifetime membership card or something like that, right? hey, you know, whatever other people do, but we're a very active type of group, and so that's the type of membership that we look for. And you asked about contributions and everything. Get in contact with us. Some of that information is on the website. Get in contact with us, and we follow up with people about how they can support us in a number of different ways.
Wonderful. My brother, if you just give us a few more minutes, it looks like there's a few folk that might have a question or a comment. Can you do that for us?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Paula. We're going to go to, and I see Sister Sheila's in queue. So, Sister Sheila, we get ready to come to you next to get that report on Black Sustainability Conference that also took place in Atlanta last week. But let's go to caller. You are at 1398. Your mic is open. Welcome to this segment of New Day.
Peace and love, Sister Empress, living on the front line.
All right now.
As usual. And I just wanted to just say, I had almost forgot about the United Black Front. I go back to Robo and Brother G2 Iwusi, the original founding members of it in Brooklyn, on Marcus Garvey Boulevard in Brooklyn. I go back to those times in the early 80s. In fact, it was 80 by itself. But anyway, and I would just say this too, sister. Why haven't nobody reached out to, Fumike, my spiritual sister? She's not my sister from blood. She's my sister from another mister. But her name was Oya Fumike. She played Mona Shirele, the Ethiopian brother, Holly Jordan, who produced and directed the movie, Sankofa. So she had a part to play. In fact, she's in Philadelphia. She did use it from Empress. But that's my spiritual sister, Oya Fumike. But nobody's ever reached out to her. She starred in the movie, Sankofa. She played the lead role opposite Luther Baruka. She played Mona Shirele in the movie, right? And I just want you to say that. And the other thing, Brother Kofi, is that you're doing a great work, revitalizing and rebuilding or whatever you're trying to do with the United Black Tribe. I forgot about that completely because I had a little thing with you two, where we'll see, but Malcolm said, don't air your dirty laundry out in the public, so I won't go into that. Empress Millet, I'm going to talk quickly because I know you got other people want to call in. You still a little young thing. On the move. On the move. I caught that. But, and you was right. But anyway, on the move, I say, peace and love. God bless.
Let me answer that, brother. Thank you for calling in, brother. And we have been in contact with Sister Oya Fumike Ogunlano, who is the star of the Sankofa movie. She's been to the caravan several times herself. And Brother Muta Baruka has been to the caravan as well. In fact, we watched the movie earlier today with a number of young people who had never seen the movie. And then a debriefing. So, sometimes we may think that people have the information we have, and no matter the age, they don't. And some people don't have it. But, yeah, we do have contact and communication with Oya Fumike Ogunlano, and she's been several times to the caravan as one of our special guests, as well as Brother Muta Baruka. But thank you for bringing that up, brother.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thanks. All right, we got one more, I think. Let me see. Did I see one more? Yep, I did. Okay, caller, you are at 9498. 9498, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 9498. Okay. Going, gone. All right. Okay, so we got one more. Let me see if Sister Sheila had a question or a comment, because she's coming up next anyway, but I just want to make sure that she might have a question or a comment for you. Hey, Sister Sheila, how you be tonight?
Greetings. I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful, as usual. I just wanted to make sure, before we let Brother Kofi go, if you had a question or a comment for us.
Well, this concept about Sankofa brings up some special memories for me as well, being here in Washington, D.C. I had the privilege while I was in high school to be one of the first groups of high school students that Brother Haile Gerima escorted personally to Bethesda to see the debut of his film Sankofa, and it was really powerful. It was a small group of us from Montgomery Blair High School in Silver Spring. I don't know how the connection came, but I suspect it was one of my African-centered teachers, probably, that had initiated the relationship. And he gave a talk. He gave a talk about the film afterwards. And I never remember, I never forget there was a distinction, there was a distinct conflict because there was a preacher there, young preacher, aspiring preacher, and he had issue with Brother Haile Jerema about the fact that the sister was shown being raped anally. Mm-hmm. And so I took up great defense to him, being, I think, a senior at Montgomery Blair, and appreciated the raw honesty of the film. It was certainly one of those transformative kind of epic moments in a child's life where, you know, something is shifting, and it obviously did for me. I was getting ready to leave high school and go into Dr. York's movement, but that movie resonated with me in ways that still affect me to this day. So I kind of just share that. And I enjoyed the talk with all of your guests.
What's up, homegirl? I'm born and raised in Washington, D.C. Born and raised, in D.C. Southeast Crew. That's me.
I wasn't raised here, but I was born here.
Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. All right, Brother Kofi. Well, again, I thank you much. And, you know, we'll be talking soon because I'm definitely going to be planning a trip to come and bring the next steps for the Million Woman World March. And also, of course, the We Trust Genocide 21. So, you know, we definitely got to come to your way and do
all
some
right.
things.
We look forward to it. Sister, thank you for the opportunity to share with your audience some about the National Black United Front and the Sankofa Caravan to the ancestors. We appreciate the opportunity, and we thank you for all of your hard work and dedication over a number of decades. And please, sister, check your email. I got a message that I need to send to you via email, okay?
Okay, will do. Thank you, my brother.
All right, Black Power.
All right. Black Power, free the land. All right, family, listen, as you can tell, we do what we do, and we do it the way we do it for a very specific reason. We're very, you know, pretty on point with certain things. Our position, our focus is of a certain type for a very specific reason. You're not going to hear us try to, you know, do the we shall overcome thing. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just that's not our main focus. This is not Kumbaya moment. And it's definitely not about trying to mix other people's agendas in with what is relevant to us as a people specifically. Again, it doesn't mean that we do not support other struggles or other situations, but our primary focus is the liberation and justice of our people, the original people. So we don't just say we the people anymore. We say we the original people so that you know who we're talking about. Before we go back to Sister Sheila and get her report on last week's Black Sustainability Conference that also took place in Atlanta, I just want to give a big shout out to, of course, Chief Elder. I got a message from him. Hope he's feeling much better. Always good to have him with us. And who else was it? Somebody else hit me up, too. I got to go back and check on that. But anyway, family, we're going to talk with our one of our ambassadors. Sister Sheila Brown is with us. Of course, she is not only an attorney, she is an author. And by the way, sisters, for those of you who have conveyed to me that you really want to grow and learn and develop as a what we call now a brilliant Black woman, a ultra Black woman. So we see, we're not just saying Black woman. No. That's for some other folks. We're putting some other emphasis on this thing now. But for those of you who have conveyed to me that you are interested, and for those of you who maybe didn't convey but you are interested, we're getting ready to do
some sessions, classes, workshops, call them what you may, but in the context of rites of passage, you're never too old to grow, at least hopefully. And so with Sister Sheila, she's going to be talking not so much tonight, but in the very near future, you're going to be able to sign up for classes based on her book and also based on my book, which I'm not going to tell you much about just yet. But we have several sisters who have been writing about, you know, different aspects of growth and development as Black women, African women, and again, African diasporic women. You see, I'm adding stuff in for a specific reason, because what we've learned is it doesn't necessarily give the full scope when you just say African women or African woman. So when you add some little, you know, things in there, it gives folks sometimes just a little more insight into what we're talking about and representing. And so we say, again, the original mother, and also, of course, again, the African diasporic woman. So that kind of, you know, makes it inclusive all across the board. So, again, you will hear us talk more about that, particularly in the next week. Special sessions are coming up. Registration begins tomorrow. Registration for the upcoming sessions. Now, these are what we call pre-sessions for Million Women World March, World Movement. Some things will be totally free, and some things will have some fees to them, because what we're realizing is that those who can need to support this movement. And again, we'll give you more information about that before we close out. But right now, let's go back to our live line and let's talk with our sister Sheila Brown. Hey, all right. So you've been doing a lot, needless to say, as usual. So tell us about last week. You know, what was the Black Sustainability Conference? What was it about? What was it for?
So thank you first for allowing me to report my findings and share some of the insights that I gleaned from having this very spiritual and organizational experience with some very powerful, forward-thinking sisters and real queens, empresses, and every positive attribute you can have. I was so thoroughly pleased and humbly impressed, not impressed in the condescending way, but impressed in an ascending way, because all of the disciplines that we expect from our daughters and sons when they go to these institutions of higher learning, and they give, through decades and years of research, all of these skills, all of these organizational development skills, all of these articulations and insights. Well, imagine all of that happening at a corporate level, but it's designed for the benefit solely of people of African descent. And that is exactly what I got to witness when sisters Raina and Yema, the co-founders of the Black Sustainability Network, and particularly this organizers of this summit, put their heads together with the other sisters and brothers that they lead to create what's known as the 8th annual Black Sustainability Summit. And yours truly not only got a chance to witness Black power in action at a most sophisticated and respectful and highly organized way, but I got to participate as a speaker. And so that was a double blessing for me. So essentially what we're talking about is a summit that has been organized by a group known as the Black Sustainability Network, which is open to membership by any one person that they define as of African descent, enthusiasts of African descent. They refer to it as people who are Black and green, meaning sustainability green. And what they were trying to do was to create what they refer to as a sacred space for us to come together, bring our ideas, our work, our community organizing in one place, or rather three places, since this is their first time, I believe, doing a live event, which took place where the black part comes in at the Black Wall Street in Stonecrest, initially for the first day, and then on the second day in Snellville at this plant, formerly owned plantation that our ancestors had been enslaved on, that's now owned by a black family, that hosts what's called the Collard Green Festival. So, you know, I was all ears for that, being the author of Divinity Soup, an ancestor-inspired recipe starring collard greens, where they were actually selling, for real, y'all, collard green ice cream. It was incredible. It was just really incredible to see the creativity of our people. So I was mindful, because of the work that I'm doing around reparations, legally about the reparations summit, but I had been summoned to participate in this aspect of our divine work. So I thought it was really, really interesting, because there were several conferences that our people were organizing around this particular weekend. And I think because we are such a diverse, and we have such diverse issues that need to be addressed, I did not find it at all conflicting that these things are going on, because the war that is being waged against us is multiverse. And so we as a nation, you know, if the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey had his way, would be operating under these functions of government, you know, as an African race. But be it as it may, we're doing the best we can with what we have. And so I had the beautiful experience of participating in this sacred space for 3 days, and to see perfectionism and excellence operating at its highest potential. And not to say that everything was perfect, because nothing is when any event is coming into fruition, but because these young ladies had did so much of the work in advance, anything that could have gone wrong, it just immediately fell right back in order. And that is I can't underemphasize how important it is for us to approach anything that comes to us with discipline, organization, and respect for time, respect for resources, respect for the creative ingenuity that we possess as a people. So I have to send much respect and shout out to these two powerful leaders who are truly personifying our relationship and our stewardship over the earth. And that was Sister Raina Turner Greenlee, the executive director and co-founder of this organization, the Black Sustainability Network, and Sister Yema Brewer, who is the director of operations and co-founder, and then their hosted team. So I did a workshop on the pillar of water. As you know, I'm very passionate about what I refer to as the 9 pillars of emergency preparedness. But I have been tasked with introducing our people to some really powerful concepts around water. And so I did that on day 2. But day 1 was really very powerful. It was a series of speakers who covered the gamut. You know what I mean? Like, they were giving us the report on the state of Black sustainability in their respective regions and disciplines. And so we heard talks after having libation by a sister from Haiti known as Baina Bello. And then we had, of course, the welcome that was done by both Raina and Yema. And then we had some talks on ecology. There was a brother, Dr. Darren Spencer, who gave us a really powerful talk about bees and the state of bees. And I think he owned a bee farm. And we had talks about farming and schools and gardening in schools. And people presented their work, their ideas, and shared their resources and connections. It was just like a bank, and people were putting all of their knowledge into the bank, so that anyone who was there, who's in this area of strategy and planning and work, that they could participate and take out of the bank. And it was just a very powerful thing. There were some presenters who, for one reason or another, didn't get to present because of some travel issues or something like that. But when I say also very interactive, like it wasn't just sitting down and listening to speaker after speaker after speaker. They incorporated breathing. They incorporated stretching. Some people refer to it as yoga. They incorporated really powerful workshop activities that get you stimulated and thinking. So it was a very African-centered experience. But one of the things that I love about these sisters is that they have found what I believe they consider to be a very workable dynamic between their need for funds that they get from all groups of people, but I love on their website, and you can check them out at blacksustainabilitysummit.com, where they said, you know, we are unapologetically committed to creating spaces where Black people can come together to strategize. I think I got muted. Okay, and then they go on to say, respectfully, if you are not of African descent, feel free to support us financially or with in-kind donations, but refrain from attending the summit and joining our network. I was like, okay, that's interesting. But, yeah, you know, so people are doing what they do, you know, and making the best out of the circumstances that they find themselves in. And I thought that was very interesting. You know, I hadn't seen that approach to the need for sacred space done in that way before. So, yeah, so then day two was at the Snellville location where the plantation was, which is a very sacred, energetic, you know, force field in itself. You know, just being on that land was beautiful. There was a lake there, and children were just being babies. They were running. Nobody was worried about their babies getting lost. You know, people were enjoying the food and the vendors and the music. And while all of these activities were going on, the Black Sustainability Summit was also going on. And so it was just this very powerful convergence of energies and intentions to bring community together and offer a variety of services and ideas and concepts. And so there was my presentation taking place in the afternoon, and all of this was outside. Like, we were really, like, right in front of each other. There was a live, I think, band taking place, and vendors were feeding. And people were just walking around, and whatever resonated with them, it's like the closest I have been to an African village, if you will, right, a functional one, where life is happening in various different facets. People are eating collard greens, people are buying food, people are going over to Brother Alton's. You know, he's doing a live workshop next to my workshop and in his tent, and I've got my tent. And whoever resonated with me or with Sister Tanita, who is an amazing sister, I would love for you to meet. You know, she did a really powerful workshop on shoes. And in surprising ways, her talk about shoes kind of really got you thinking about what it is we are doing with our resources. So, I mean, that workshop was just really incredible. She does recycling of shoes. I think she's out of California. And she just has some really powerful things to say about shoes and how long it takes shoes to break down and how destructive they are and what happens to the shoes that Americans don't want and how they end up dumping all of their waste on brothers and sisters on the continent and in Asia and forcing them to deal with our problems, you know, as we're creating these massive issues with plastics and materials that do not break down, you know. And so she's, you know, mm-hmm. operating in her divine creativity to basically mm-hmm. come up with solutions to that by breaking those down. So it's really powerful for me, very powerful speakers and insights. Mm-hmm. And anyone who wants to see those replays, I believe you can still go to the website blacksustainabilitysummit.com and check out what they have to offer. But yeah, I was really, really grateful to participate in that and share and come back and report to you all.
Oh, great. My sister, I thank you so much. And family, again, that was Sister Sheila Brown, who is not only an attorney and an author, she is one of our official MWWM ambassadors, which you're going to hear more about in the next week or so. Remember, Million Women March Day is here in Philadelphia, October 25th. We'll be doing our first Hands Around City Hall, which is kind of a launch or a kickoff for what we're going to be doing at the United Nations come next year in March with Hands, and this is African Women, Hands Around the United Nations. Again, we use a formula called three. What is P3? Power, meaning also, of course, justice and self-determination. The other P, prosperity. And, of course, that means we got to get back into reparatory justice, economic, finance, sustainability. And, of course, the other P is peace. But there can be no real peace until there is power and prosperity. That includes, of course, justice, because if there's no justice, there can be no peace. We're going to tell you more about that next week. At any rate, I thank you, my sister. Please let our folks know where they can get in touch with you at.
Well, thank you for that. I, the various hats that I wear, I do emergency preparedness workshops, and I have one that I offer for free called The Pillar of Water. So if anyone is interested in my free or inviting me to come out and do a workshop for your community, your association, you can reach me by texting me at 202-952-6123. In fact, if you text the word, the acronym S like Sam, B like boy, and S like Sam, S-E-S, text that word to that number, 202-952-6123, you'll get a link that shows you the things that I do on social media and events that I'm having. And so I also have an event tomorrow at 3:30. I'm doing my 9 Pillars of Emergency Preparedness Workshop via Eventbrite. So if you go to Eventbrite and just type in Emergency Preparedness, 9 Pillars, or Sheila Brown, you might see it there. Or you can just text me at that number, 202-952-6123. I have discounted it to just $47. This is a value that's over $300, but I have discounted it to make it accessible to our community and so that they can also still value the time. It's a four-hour workshop, but it goes by so fast, and trust me, I'm always fighting the participants to let me get off of the call. So don't be intimidated by 4 hours. It goes by like the snap of a finger. And I also have a website, Queendom Care, which is QUEENDOMQARE.com. So thank you, family, for listening, and I look forward to meeting you all soon.
All right. Okay, I was looking for Brother Akbar was supposed to be calling in to give us a report on the rally today in Mississippi. Of course, justice for Rasheem Carter. I'm not seeing him, so we'll probably do that next week. And I'm looking for also Brother Adrian. He's our Baton Rouge correspondent. I'm not seeing him in queue either. So I guess what we need to do is remind everyone that you need to know that this program tonight is also a salute to the great Fannie Lou Hamer, and that's how we started off with hearing from and talking about Fannie Lou Hamer, who is also one of our 25 sister saints. Also, family, those of you who are listening through the Internet, if you want to stay with us, you can, but you got to call in now using the podcast number 319-527-6189. Again, 319-527-6189. You could stay with us if you do that. But if you're listening by way of the Internet, you're going to lose that live stream in about 4 minutes. So hurry up and get on back with us. Again, we are looking for Brother Akbar. I'm not seeing him, but if I'm missing you, Brother Akbar, you need to press 1 now. I also do not see. Looking for Brother Adrian. Again, family, you have to press 1 so I can see you.
Again, this tonight's program is a tribute to not only Fannie Lou Hamer. St. Fannie Lou is also a tribute to ancestor Ken Bridges. For those who do not know him or know of him, of course, he too was born here in Philadelphia, now an ancestor. His transition date took place on October the 11th. He was murdered by the so-called D.C. sniper. Again, we remember Brother Ken Bridges, his great work for Mata, and I'm going to play a few words from him. Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. Wait. Something went wrong there. I'm trying to cue this up again. Let's see if I can get it back. Hold on. There we go. Let's try this again. Again, this is Brother Ken Bridges.
Power on. Bluetooth mode. Device paired.
Oh, sorry about that, y'all. Okay.
About reparations today, and we're excited about reparations. It is owed us. It is due. There was a crime against humanity called slavery, and reparations is due. But in a conversation that we had with Dr. Conrad Worrall back in January, when we were talking about the Mata Network, a black channel of distribution, linking up black people that are spending money with black people that are making goods and services and working to get our $600 billion that are in black hands to stay in black hands longer, when Conrad heard what Mata was about, he said, my brother Ken, what you are talking about is a form of reparations that we have not talked a lot about, my brother. But he said it's a form of reparations that's called internal reparations. Conrad went on to say, he said, brother, this concept of internal reparations comes initially from 1993, the first Pan-African Conference on Reparations. And Dr. Chinwezu, Professor Chinwezu in Nigeria, coined the term internal repair. Dr. Chinwezu said that reparations is not mostly about money. Chinwezu said that reparations is mostly about internal repair. Repair of ourselves spiritually, brothers and sisters, mentally, brothers and sisters, economically, brothers and sisters, internal repair. Chinwezu went on to say, and Dr. Worrell coining the term internal reparations embraced it fully by simply saying that internal reparations is what we can do for ourselves. External reparations is what others must do for us, they owe us. But brothers and sisters, make no mistake about it. These two efforts must be simultaneous. We must demand reparations because it is due us from them. They owe us, no question about it. But brothers and sisters, I want you to think about this for a moment. We owe ourselves. Do you feel me? We owe ourselves internal reparations. We don't have to ask anybody for it. We don't have to beg anybody for it. We don't have to plead anybody to give it to us. We simply must do two things. We've got to love ourselves more and love our race more, and then we will look inside and do for ourselves. Are you feeling me? Brothers and sisters, we have to keep the pressure on for internal and external reparations. Today is a very different sort of a march, though. See, today, Viola Plummer, Sister Viola Plummer, and Dr. Conrad Worrall said that today was going to be a day that we focused on action. Oh, yes, we must talk. We must rap and we must clap. But brothers and sisters, we got to take one more step. You see, we got to take action. Now, Mata has come with a map. It's a basic map. It's a Mata action plan for internal reparations. We're not by ourselves on this internal reparations. And COBRA is at the forefront of internal reparations, external reparations. Then BUS is involved in internal and external reparations. D12, we're in this with the UNIA, the New Black Panther Party. We're together and united in the fact that we must get external reparations. But brothers and sisters, we are responsible for internal reparations ourselves. I want to direct you to an action step very quickly. There are brothers and sisters that have Mata t-shirt on just like I have on. Mata is a people, it's a movement, and it's a business. The people of African people, people of African descent who know that we must give and buy black. It's a movement organizing those people to be able to be involved in a business that's a black channel of distribution where our goods and services that we spend for everyday consumption, we must bring that into the black. It is not any way sensible for us to give 95% of our dollars away. So we simply say this. If we got external reparations tomorrow and tomorrow was Sunday. If we don't turn around and give ourselves internal reparations, we will give the benefit of that external reparations right back by Tuesday or Wednesday. Are you feeling me? But I'm simply saying to you that our reparations is not going to be wasted. Our ancestors have given too much, done too much. Marcus Garvey has told us we got to think black, be black, buy black, and everything else will take care of itself. Make sure, brothers and sisters, that you get with one of these Mata brothers and sisters, get information from them so you can get involved in an action plan. I'm talking about what are we going to do tomorrow? What are we going to do next week? I'm saying that this is great today, but it would be a failure, brothers and sisters, if we don't take another step after today. Are you feeling me? But let's make sure that we don't end our reparations fight today. It goes on and on and on, and you can only do that with an action plan. I say to you, internal reparations, external reparations, it's due. Internal, we owe ourselves. Think black, be black, buy black. Thank you very much.
Again, that was Brother Ken Bridges, who indicated was murdered, I believe, 2001 on October 11th. Supposedly, the sniper, the so-called DC sniper, is said to be the entity that murdered him. I would be remiss if I did not mention that it was reported that Brother Ken was coming from a very important meeting, which was with another black man who had agreed to finance or put additional funds into the Mata Network. For those of you who are not familiar with the Mata Network, it was one of the most fast-growing independent business network types that I've ever seen, and certainly I dare say in our lifetime. Ken Bridges was brilliant, and that puts it mildly. I knew him personally. He used to come to my shop, which was the first headquarters for the Million Women March. He and his wife used to come often to patronize us, but also to just sit and talk with us. Supposedly this coming from a meeting on October 11th, and that meeting, it is said that there was an agreement with him and another black man who had quite a bit of money. That particular person was said to have been a millionaire, actually, and had agreed to put further monies into the development of Mata. Ken was coming from that meeting, as it had been reported, and supposedly the D.C. sniper shot him, and, of course, he was killed. We remember Ken for many reasons, but also to let you all know that MWM has developed what we call the Black Print Agenda 25. And in honoring Ken and others, the idea of internal reparations has now come into a format that we've now designed, inspired by him and Madam C.J. Walker and Marcus Garvey and others. But ours is the Black Print Agenda 25, which is actually a 10-year program, but we're only going to put out there 3 to 5 years, with the year 2025 being very, very important because we'll be able to evaluate our progress for the next couple of years. MWM, or should I say MWWM, will be holding special sessions in another week and a half. Those who are interested in participating, you need to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Our website is up. It's still under construction, but it is official, Million Women World March. There will be some updates, important updates, starting tomorrow and or Monday, which will allow you to register for the upcoming sessions. Again, some of the sessions will be free. Other sessions will be not, and you will be able to see what they are. Some of these sessions will also include those sisters who are really ready to move forward. Are you ready for the United Nations of African Women? Yep, we're getting ready to bring that forward. It is one of our new units, along with the Commission on the Status of African Women North America, and, of course, the Union, the National Union of Black Women Workers. These are some of our new federation components, and there are many, many others. We have worked diligently in these past years, even
under being under severe attack and even infiltrated again. We're going to tell you more about that because we suspect that that particular person will try to either sell some of the information that she was able to get from us while posing as a supporter or what have you, and that, as it turned out, she was really sent in to disrupt and to just, you know, try to slander and so forth. So that's a whole other session we're going to be doing on COINTELPRO in the 21st century. But at any rate, family, we are getting ready to close out now, and we thank all of you for tuning in. I want to also remind you that this program was also a salute to the great Father Paul Washington. And did we play a clip from him last week? I got to check to see because, yes, we did, but we didn't finish it. His position on reparations is very interesting, and it was recorded in 1964, I believe it was. But to hear Father Paul Washington, who was definitely a man of the clergy, but extremely wonderfully progressive, you need to hear his views. At any rate, we thank all of you again for tuning in to this segment of New Day, and definitely hope you will continue to share the information, support. You can do that by many ways now. We're going for our million membership, one in a million membership. We got to get a million members. I mean, the Honorable Marcus Garvey showed us that. Why we could not do that now in the 21st century is totally unacceptable. Again, $1 will be what is asked to be to start with, of course, but $1, be a one in a million member. For more information, again, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can text 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. So listen, family, we're going to move forward and get ready for Million Woman March Day, October 25th. And the 30th and the 31st, we're declaring that as Million Woman March Days of Service. So sisters in particular, no matter what city you're in, plan to do something with another sister or sisters that, you know, does something special. It could be a poetry jam session. It could be just a discussion. It could be doing something. Go to a shelter. Go to a prison. This is one of the kinds of things that we're getting ready to do now and bring forward with the MWM World Movement, is to literally go into our communities and do various things, particularly for our women and girls. And guess what? We're going to raise our own monies, so that we're not caught up in, I think Brother Kofi put it pretty well earlier, this whole thing of these grants and all of that, and again, it's wonderful. I'm not saying don't, but most people, that's all they're doing. They're not being creative to come up with how to get your own monies. We figured it out. Next week, we're going to share it with you. And by the way, if you are a person that makes jewelry or a natural product, we want to market you. Tell you more about that next week. Again, we say Asante Sana to everyone. And got a lot we're going to share with you next week, family. Our journal is now available, or will be available if you wish to advertise with the journal. The newspaper, that deadline is over. That edition will be coming out next week. But the journal, a mandala journal, is still available. You can get your ad up to October 25th, and it will be released on November 4th at our dinner, where we will do the installation of our new Million Woman March warrior and community queens. Tell you more about that next week. Till next time, we say Pamoja to the Shenda. Together we shall win. And I dare say, in our lifetime. Peace out, y'all.